Hello everyone, this is David Lichtenstein and welcome to Headlines Radio. This week our guest will be Rav Yaakov Feitman, the Rav of Gehillas Beis Yehudah Tzvi of Cedarhurst, New York. Our topic will be Jewish missionaries. Should we be trying to help the world be Mekayim, the Zion Mitzvahs B'nai Noach? Is that part of our emissary down to this world? Next week, our guest will be Rabbi Yehuda David Bleich of the Kol Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, and the topic will be vaccinations. Does a school have to accept a child whose parents refuse to vaccinate him or her? Or additionally, is there a chiyuv because of Shmarta Masnaf Shesechem, etc., to be vaccinated? The following week, we will have Hagoyin, Rav Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, Rav Shechta, and the topic will be bankruptcy and halacha. You could listen to us on WMCA 570 or on WMCA.com on the Zev Brenner Network or at NachumSiegel.com. If you have any questions, you can email us at questions@headlinesbook.com. Welcome, Rabbi Feitman. Jewish missionaries, should we be trying to help the world be Mekayim Zion Mitzvahs B'nai Noach?
So, you know, this is an interesting question, which not only is a machlokas between two recent gedolim, one recently passed away, and one l'avdu Mekayim L'chaim alive, but they continue the mesira of their ancestors, and that is the Lubavitcher Rebbe, continuing, I believe, the Messiah of Hasidus, that we have obligations to the Gentiles, to the Goyim, in terms of B'nai Noach, and Lahavdol Mechaim Lechaim Rav Sternbach, who is a Ben Achaben, I believe he mentions all the time, of the Vilna Goyim, the Gra, who holds that it's none of our business and we should leave them alone. And you'll let me know when I can discuss their sources, and I'll be happy to do so.
So let me start with that. You know, we have a medrash in Vayikra. We just read. It says Atem Edei, Num Hashem. And what does the medrash say? Im lo yagid v'nas avoyna, im lo sagidu alei kusilu meisaylam hareani perea michem. So it seems that there are kama chazals that would seem to imply that we do have such a chiyuv.
Right. So the truth is that even Rav Sternbach, who recognizes this chiyuv, cites a Gemara that in the beginning of Bava Basra, that one could use the word overrides, but it's obviously a very delicate word that overrides that chiyuv. Just to mention this Gemara to start, the Gemara says in the beginning of Bava Basra, Daf Yud Amud Beis, there's a story between Ifra Hormiz. She was the mother of the Shavar Malka. So what happened was that she sent $400 to Rav Ami and to give it out to the Ani, and he wasn't Mekabalit. So then she sent it to Rava, and Rava, because of Shalom Malchus, for the sake of getting along with the government and then probably for the safety of the Yidden, accepted it. So Rav Ami heard about this, and he had a taina. So when Rav Ami heard, he was makpid. So he quoted a pasuk in Yeshaya. Now the pasuk in Yeshaya is crucial. It's in the beginning of Perek Chav Zayin, Kapitel Chav Zayin, pasuk Yedalef, and the pasuk says like this. This pasuk is quoted by numerous paiskim. Bivosh kitzira tishavarna noshim ba'ois me'irois aisa. So the Rebbe says, and how Rav Sternbach refutes it. But the Gemara in the beginning of Bava Basra tells a story about a Gentile king, Umas Ha'olam, okay, that Ifra Hormiz, who was the mother of Shvar Malka, King Shapur. So she sent some money to Reb Ami, who was obviously one of the great Amoraim, one of the Gedolei Hador, to distribute to the needy as tzedakah. V'lei kablin, he was not Mekabel the money. So she wanted to give it to some Jewish leader. So Shadrinishka made the Rava. So she sent it to Rava, the Kablina Mishum Shalom Malchus. So he accepted it in order to have good relations with the Umas HaOlam and the leaders of the Umas HaOlam. So Shama Rabbi Ami Ikpit. So Rabbi Ami heard about what Rava did, and he was upset. And he quoted a pasuk. The pasuk says, "Bivoish." This is a pasuk in the beginning of Yeshaya, in kapitel, that's chapter Chav Zayin 27, and pasuk Yud Aleph 11. So it says like this: "Bivoish kitzira tishavarna." There will come a time when the Umas HaOlam's leadership, when their greatness will wither, they will lose whatever, let's call it, moral and ethical standing that they have, and that will break them. And Nashim Bois, Mi'irei Seisa. And then women, meaning it won't even take a lot of strength, because women over here are the representation of the weaker power, they will simply be able to overcome them. So what does this mean? So one of the basic halachas over here is that we shouldn't accept tzedakah from the Umas HaOlam, because that constitutes a chilul Hashem. But Rav Sternbach's position he's not the only one. In fact, Rav Chana Wasserman, I just wanted to mention the source, is a very interesting one, in Kaibit Shiurim over here in Bava Basra, Rav Chana and Ois Nun Vav considers that this might be an Isser Da'iraisa. He just says it might be, he's not sure. And what would that Isser be? That Isser would be to be Matka the Gaul. And I just want to mention that Rav Sternbach is in a number of places in the Chuvitz Van Hoggis, but I'm looking right now at Chela Gimel Simon Shin Yud Zayin. I believe this is the one where he discusses this at the greatest length. And he says that by doing so, by strengthening the Umas HaOlam, we in fact push off the Geula. Because the Geula is, if everyone remembers the great wrangle between Yaakov and Esav, it's Kishizek comes a Neufel. One is up and the other one is down. So if we enhance the Umas HaOlam and push them up by strengthening their keeping of the Zion mitzvahs, so then, in fact, they get better, and we are matka the geula, because all along the way, the last couple of millennia, we have many zechusim, and we suffered, so we are bringing the geula, and then all of a sudden, we're pushing it off, because, in fact, we're enhancing our adversaries.
So, yes. Rabbi Feitman, the Rambam in the Hagdama to the Sefer HaMitzvahs brings the mitzvah, he brings it twice, Sayin the Yad HaChazaka. But in the Hagdama to the Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Rambam is very clear that there's a chiyuv to be makar of all the Umos HaOlam,
right,
to the mitzvahs Hashem, notwithstanding the Gemara and Baba Basra. So wouldn't it seem that Rav Sternbach has sort of gone out on a limb here? Because the simple way to say that there's no stira between the Medrash and the Gemara Baba Basra is the Gemara Baba Basra is talking about Goyim or Umos HaOlam who are not Mekayim Zayin Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Those who are Mekayim Zayin Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, the Rambam says clearly, have a Chelek L'Olam Haba. You can't say that an Akum who has a Chelek L'Olam Haba is Madchik de Geula. So it would seem Rav Sternbach humbly has confused two issues. He's taken the Umos HaOlam who are Rishayim, who are Madchei de Geula, and he said not to be Makar of them because of a Gemara that says that the Umos HaOlam, if they do a mitzvah, the Rishayim, it's Daicha de Geula. So I don't really understand
right,
his situation. Right,
right. So it would certainly seem that way. And in point of fact, one of the there are actually two interesting other sources that support what you're saying, and Lubavitch Rebbe alludes to them, I believe. By the way, the source, for those that are interested, of the Lubavitch Rebbe, it's in the Likutei Sichas. It comes in Chalakim, so it's Chelek Chav Vav, and it's on Parshas Yisrael, but it can be found, I believe it's page 132. It's a long Sicha, and that was the original Sicha where he started what was called his Miftza, let's call it almost a crusade towards the Bnei Noach, and to enhance, he felt, actually, as you're quoting from the Rambam, to make them better human beings. And he quotes an even stronger Rambam, which, by the way, Rav Sternbach doesn't shy away from, and that's the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim. The Rambam in Hilchos Malachim says that Lakuf, we're obligated, we'll just take that look at that Rambam for a second, because it enhances your Rambam. The Rambam in Perek Ches in Malachim, Malach Yud says, Maish Rabbeinu Le'inchal HaTarev HaMitzvus Elul Yisrael, Shehem HaRosh HaKilosh Yaakov. However, there's a separate tzivu, there's a separate command. V'chein tzivu m'pi'agvur Lakuf, and then he goes on what our obligation is. So it seems clear that we have obligations to the Umas HaOilam. So Rav Sternbach, interestingly enough, just simply refers to Jewish history, and he says that we don't find in Jewish history that we went out to try to enhance them. If they did it, adrabah, you know, it's wonderful. It's the person is being moral and ethical and he's keeping the Zion mitzvahs. But that we should go out and do that to our own negation, to our own,
He's saying there were never Jewish missionaries. That's what Rav Sternbach points
out. Right, right. He's saying that it was not. I think I even marked off the Lashon is very interesting. He says, first of all, mutav lanu lishtoik. It's better that we should say nothing. But he brings up another very interesting point, which is that Lubavitcher Rebbe, for instance, felt that we should get them to keep as many of the seven mitzvahs as possible. But on the other hand, Rav Sternbach taines that mimanav shach, if we go to the Neitzrim, which is a great part of the community that we would be trying to influence, especially given what's going on today with the Aravim and with the Muslims, so they have become our enemy in this day and age, and it's very unlikely that we're going to have any influence on them, and it's possible that bichlal that they're not over there by the Zara.
Wait, let me just interrupt 1 minute. The Rambam that you're referring to, that Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded lachayif his kol ha'olam to mekayim the Zayin mitzvahs. The argument there would be it's only when they're tachas shulteinu, when they're under our aegis. But at this point in time, the Rambam would not be negeya. Wouldn't that be?
Right. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe had a chiddush, which, you know, Rav Sternbach, of course, denies. But Lubavitcher Rebbe's chiddush was that there's two dinim. It's kind of like a brisker vart. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, and it seems that the chidah, and maybe even a radak seem to hold like him, say that there's two inyanim. One is lokuf, when they're tachas yodenu, as you say, they're under our aegis, that we can almost force them. Which of course, Rav Sternbach Bechlal holds, you know, is meaningless when it comes to Bnei Noach, because the Rambam holds in Hilchos Gerushin that by a Yid, there's a natural affinity for mitzvahs and for doing the right thing.
I think it would mean influence them. I think that would be a better...
Right. So Lakov clearly could be translated in such a way, persuade, influence, and do pa'ulas. That's how the Lubavitcher Rebbe, of course, is going about, and his Hasidim in the last 20 years or so, are going about the Mifta, this
program.
particular attempt is to influence and to go out. In fact, it's interesting. They even have a website, I believe. It's called asknoah.org. www. Have it in front of me. asknoah.org, and it's teaching them the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. So Rav Sternbach's taina is that we're hurting ourselves in the process. So let's leave that aside for a second. He says that there's also a terrible kind of a misleading and almost a chil Hashem. He taines in this particular tshuva that because the notes, by and large, are acknowledged by almost all of our poskim to be ovdei avodah zarah, and the way he learns is they certainly corporealize the Bairi Olam Chas V'Shalom. So when we say to them, it's okay, listen, you can stay good notes, just do the following. So we're misleading them into thinking that they are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah.
But doesn't the Rama say that the Neitzrim are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah?
So he doesn't mention, it's interesting that you mentioned this, that there may be, and he alludes to this just a little bit, there may be different gradations and different phenomena within the Neitzrim themselves. There are those that are Makshimim, they have the icons, and they also believe in the Shilush, so that there are three. That's already polytheism, and that's Avodah Zarah mamish. But, and then there are those that are monotheistic in a certain sense, as are the Muslims today.
Yeah,
but from that Ramah, that's where the Gra talks about it over there.
A lot of Paiskim say that even though the Noitzrim believe in Shituf, it doesn't have a din of Avodah Zarah for them, even though clearly for a Yid would have a din of Avodah Zarah. The reason being is they have a din of Anochi, but by them there's no La Yalacha.
Right.
So there's no Issa Shituf by a guy, but whereas by Yisrael there would be an Issa Shituf. So again, I'm not sure where Rabbi Sternbuch is coming from, because it's very possible that a Noitzri to a Noitzri does not have a din of an Avodah Zarah. At least according to the way to Ramah. I mean, the Noitzri to Yehud and many argue under Ramah, but that's how the Ramah learns.
Right. That's the Ramah, and the guy also disagrees.
His grandfather, Rav Sternbuch's grandfather.
Yeah, right. He's going with the guy. So, but besides that, so he feels that there's a kind of a lifna iver, even if Shituf, let's say there's a hetta for Shituf, but it's not the ideal. It's a hetta for them. Now, obviously one can take the other position. So let's say that there's one that they won't be keeping, even if we take the worst case scenario, but if we can get them to keep the other six, so we've accomplished something. So that's where his other svara comes in, is that we're shooting ourselves in the foot, in a certain sense, about the geula. So he even feels that there's a marshal. The marshal says in the Amshul Shleiman in Bava Kamma that there's a Yehorig Val Yavar, that we're not allowed to be misalif to Goyim, to Akum, to the Umas Ha'olam, a din of the Torah. So you're right, he doesn't really discuss that much the Shituf. He kind of alludes to it a little bit, but he's taking the position that Shituf for them is Avodah Zarah. Once you say that, it's a much smoother road to say that we shouldn't get involved with them at all, because it looks like we're supporting, or at the very least, condoning their worship of Avodah Zarah.
So here's, listen to this. I'm not sure if you may have reached, seen it, the Sefer HaChassidim, Taf Shin Chaf Hey. He says like this: Im Raya Adam Nachri Oisa Avera, Im Yochai Limcha Is Yimcha, Sherei Shalach Hakadosh Baruch Hu Es Yoyne Leninve LeShivam.
Right. So it's interesting. Rav Sternbuch actually quotes that. And he takes the other side, not so much against the Sefer Chassidim, but he says, let's look at Yaina. So Yaina didn't want to go to them. Why not? So part of it is what everybody knows, is that it would make Klal Yisrael look bad. It would be mekatrik on Klal Yisrael. But the flip side of that is also that it would hurt us, because they would do tshuva. As soon as the Umas Ha'olam are doing tshuva and we're not, so it upsets the apple cart of Geula again.
Yeah, but it seems that the Rabbeinu Shalom said, Yaina, you're wrong and you should go.
Right. So the Rabbeinu Shalom at that time wanted, the Rabbeinu Shalom had a cheshbon. That's Rav Sternbuch's position. The Rabbeinu Shalom's cheshbon was that Yaina is gonna do not only something for Nineveh, that's the least of it, they're going to become the poster child for tshuva. It's like a kavah chaymer. If they can do tshuva with one little drasha, so we hear drashas every day and musar every day and we lay in every day. So avada, we should do tshuva. So that was the Rabbi Shon Cheshman, but not at the expense of, over all the ages, that we should enhance the religiosity of the Umas Ha'olam.
So he's arguing on the Sefer Hasidim, Rav Sternbuch.
Yeah, it would seem so. Yeah, it would certainly seem so. Now, I did want to mention that, you know, in favor of the position that you seem to be taking, and certainly the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that one has to take a look at there's a chidah. He quotes a very interesting chidah. The chidah, let me see, is in the Sefer. There's a Maaser Rav, you know, the Minhagim of the Gra, but this is the Maaser Rav of the Chidah, and he quotes it. He says, "Va'ani omarti la'akum maniska sheyomeli b'mem maimin." He says he spoke to a certain member of the Umas Ha'olam. He said, "What do you believe?" So the fellow said, "Ba'Hashem Elokei Yisrael." So he said he believes in Hashem, our God. So the Chida checked this out. He investigated, and he did a little Jishra Chakira interrogation. And V'amarti lo imkein b'abayku b'erev toimar posuk Shema Yisrael v'tekayim zayin mitzvah. The tizor mishituf. That's the interesting thing.
Wow.
That the chidor told him, watch out for shituf, but he told him, do keep the zayin mitzvahs. So that certainly seems to mitigate against Rav Sternbuch. And the radak is very interesting. The radak is on the other pasuk, the famous pasuk that Rav Sham Shmuel Hirsch always quotes about us being an Or LaGoyim. So on that pasuk of Or LaGoyim, a light unto the Gentiles, Yishayim Mem Tezvav, so the Radak says, Ki v'sibas Yisrael yi agoyim shoimrim shevim mitzvahs, v'yelchu b'derech taiva. So the Radak also, Rav Sternbuch doesn't quote all that.
Yeah, but the problem respectfully about the Radak is, does Rav Babich Rebbe quote the Radak?
The Lavish Rebbe does in a footnote, yes.
Yeah, but the problem, the Radak is, the whole pasuk is going on Lassid Lavoy, on the future, at the
end
of time.
Oh, right. So Rav Sternbuch taka holds, and it's very interesting how he says it. He says, wait a minute, what about all that Or LaGoyim stuff and all that? He says, excuse me, Lissak and Olam and Malchus Shakai is Lassid Lavoy, because, you know, we always talk about Tikkun Olam and that, fellow that thinks that tikkun means something else, you know, is always writing to us that we should do tikkun. But Rav Sternbuch writes, on the contrary, tikkun olam, that's for the Rabbeinu Shlom to do. He has an interesting line on it where he says, excuse me, leave that to the Rabbeinu Shlom. We'll do ours. Let's do our mitzvahs, and the Rabbeinu Shlom will do tikkun olam when Mashiach will come.
And the Radak, the very Radak that you're quoting, says, Kishehegiyas manach waitse me'agolos. So it's clearly talking about at the
end. Right, that's right. Very good,
it's
very good.
At the end of time.
So the other point that Rav Sternbuch is making is, you know, that when we get involved with them, so like you mentioned that maybe they are not all Oivdei Avodah Zarah. So he says that the flip side is that if, let's say, we're put into the position where Rabbanim or Kiruv people or whatever you're going to call them are going to start negating Christianity, he feels that this is going to cause a potential sakana to all of Klal Yisrael. Because that's all we need, he says. we're fragile enough in our galus. Says leave it alone. This is not something, and that's why he claims that Aviseinu. I'm quoting now. I feel our ancestors never got involved in this kind of stuff. So I thought that to some extent this nachlokes is the insular versus the almost outreach of Hasidus versus the somewhat insular Goyen and Vilna and Litvish approach to Klal Yisrael. It's a kind of like a fascinating look at the larger nachlokes between the two.
Now, is going back to one point that you spoke about, I would think that a lot of Rav Sternbuch's points are very debatable. Like when he says that the Pasuk B'Yivosht Tishavarna goes on somebody who's a guy who's a tzaddik, who's a ben olam haba, is to me extremely debatable. But what I would say is that, and I think Rav Moshe writes that, they came out with a sefer in the last few years. It's called Mesoras Moshe.
Yeah, I have it. Yes, I know what you're doing.
And over there he talks about it, and he was asked this question. And basically, it seems Rav Moshe's feeling was as follows. I mean, when you look at the history of the last 2,000 years of Klal Yisrael and Gullus, you know, when the Ramban had the great debate in Spain, he said, I asked the king for measure that I be allowed to speak freely and that not be beheaded for stating my position. I think that for the most part, we've been in quite intolerant and inhospitable lands until rather recently.
Right.
So
I'm sure he notes this, by the way, that things have changed, and that's why he feels that he can bring this up now.
So my point is, I think halachically, I mean, the Rambam where he writes in, you know, Sayin Diyad HaChazaka and Sayin Sefer HaMitzvahs, he's speaking about in a perfect world. But we haven't been living in a perfect world for the last 2,000 years, and you know, until very recently, you know, it's been very considered very politically incorrect to have religious debate.
Right.
So
right,
so
right,
I would say that the reason why it hasn't been done, you know, the Rama in Simon Lamed Ches, Lamed Tes, and Evan Ezra, he talks about, Shulchan Aruch talks about, are you allowed to marry a Ketana? So the Beis Yosef says you're not allowed to. So the Rama says our minig is to marry a Ketana. He says because there are so few of us, and we're so in danger of our lives that maybe if you don't marry this Ketana, you'll never find another person in your life to marry.
Right.
So
right,
clearly,
yeah.
You know, we in a survival mode. It's very hard to take the position of you want to begin proselytizing as well. So I would disagree. Say that I find that what Rav Sternberg is saying is halachically is a chiddush, but from a practical point of view, it's very hard to enact what the Rambam says when your survival is constantly at stake.
Right, and he, you know, he notes this. He says that you know, as I mentioned before, in terms of Nazareth, which we do live in a society, you know, quite defined by Nazareth, that for us to suddenly come out and say you're all wrong, you know, your entire approach is wrong. So it seems that conversation that the Chidah had with one particular member of the Yom Ha'Olam, so he found a good guy who was willing to say no, I'm a Unitarian or something.
Or even not even to say you're wrong, but I can do. I think there are things that can be improved. So let me go off on a little bit of a tangent, but it's somewhat related.
Please.
The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos in Mitzvah Shlishis, when he talks about Mitzvahs Ahavas Hashem, he talks about Shemitzvazu Kaleles Shenidresh V'Nikra Hanashim Kulam Lavaydasa Yisalav Lahamin Bay. He says when somebody loves somebody, they would wish it on them that they be loved by others. And why isn't it that we don't call our brethren to love Hashem? Now, I don't want to say that this is quote-unquote a Lubavitcher-sounding Rambam, but the Rambam clearly does seem to impute on us certainly to our fellow, to our brethren, to call others to, you know, to try harder, to do better in their service. And why is it then, whereas we can accept Rav Sternberg that it could be exceedingly dangerous in a hostile world, but why is it in our own community so little kirov, with the exception of Chabad and maybe Eish HaTorah, and, you know, everybody goes to Eretz Yisrael, they go up onto their roof to see the Kaisel. Why, with 85% or 90% of the Jews in America not Shomrei Torah mitzvahs? I'll tell you an interesting thing. At work, I hired a woman to work there, and for many years I thought she was Italian because her last name is the same as a very famous Italian actor. And one day I found out that she's Jewish. So I said, I never knew that. She says, oh, my maiden name is a you know, she's Jewish. She married.
Right,
I said, well,
right.
Do you know anything about Judaism? Did you ever hear of Abraham? She said, never heard of him. Isaac, never heard of him. Jacob, never. I said, so what do you know? She says, I saw Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments, and that's what I know about Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, whereas we can accept Rav Sternbach, and whereas we can refute and say the Lubavitcher Rebbe is a little bit going out on a limb here when he's trying to bring mitzvah tanks to, you know, to the general populace, why, as Fruma Jews, have we sort of abandoned this Rambam towards our brethren?
Right. No, I think that's a very good point. You know, the only thing I can say, you know, historically, and I think that if we look at the last number of years, just very recently, the yeshiva world has turned almost as if they discovered Kirov and outreach. And really, in a certain sense, it's been almost unfair to those that have been doing it for so many years, as you mentioned, Chabad and Eish HaTorah, et cetera. So I think that Reb Aaron Cutler and others like him, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, they felt that we have to turn inward because we lost so much. I think starting with the Holocaust, the Churban Europa. And it's only now starting to be at the point where, you know, like the Goyen's famous metaphor about the overflowing cup, that we have enough in the cup to overflow to our brethren. There's no question that we all should be doing kiruv. Like you mentioned before, Rav Moshe Zatzal, I think it's in that Maseres Moshe also, that everyone is supposed to give their meiser, a yeshiva guy, is supposed to give 10% of his time for kiruv and for working with people that are of a lesser level than him. So I think that's starting to creep into our society, Baruch Hashem. Maybe it's been too slow, but it's coming. I think it's on its way. It's on its way, Baruch Hashem. It's not foreign to us as it's been for about 50 years.
So I'll tell you something. We try to have, non-Frumma people over on Friday nights. And the problem is that as Kiruv, because it's very inspiring, a Shabbos, like to quote the famous Yosef Imashi, Kol Yisrael Shamru Es HaShabbos, HaShabbos Shamru Es Yisrael, right? And it does, and it often has a real reaction on people. People say it's just been inspiring. The problem being that, many of them drive to the house on Shabbos, which creates its own set of problems.
Right. By the way, ironically, Rav Sternbach is the big mako on that, He's the one that says that lifna either only means when you want to hurt somebody, and since you're inviting them, and even though they're going to drive, but your kavana is that they should be uplifted by your Shabbos, your chant, and your zmiris, it's mutter. It's shocking almost where it's coming from, but he has defended it ever since he wrote it in Chelek Aleph of the Tshuvas Vanhagas. So thank God we do have people that are very pro-Kiruv, even in the most right wing of right wings.
And I would just like to add on another thought to that, is that we all know that Pikuach Nefesh is Doicha Shabbos.
Right.
And even Echad Minei Elef is Doicha Shabbos. If somebody has a Mapoila Shenafla Alav, and there's a 99.9% chance that he's dead,
right,
you would still call Hatzalah and they would still come, right?
Right.
So what's the halacha on a Ruchnius to Pikuach Nefesh?
Right, Mishnah Berurah writes that it's in fact that's the term pikuach nefesh. Is the interesting thing. It's not pikuach.
So if you invite somebody, and it's interesting, we just last week had an 83-year-old man at our house Friday night, and he said it's the first time he's ever been by a Shabbos meal, and he's 83, and he lives in New York City. So I ask you, if it could light a spark, does that possibly have a din of pikuach nefesh?
Right.
And if it does, just if Hatzalah could drive, send four ambulances to somebody's house, if Nuflal of Mapoilus, why can't you send a car for this person, Al Pikuach Nefesh, if you feel that the Shabbos may inspire them?
Right. I think it's a good point. And as I said, Rav Sternbach, if anything, gave a blanket heter, and it's been reiterated many times. Not everybody agrees with him, clearly, and many gedolim feel that unfortunately, maybe until recently, it was a rachak dika chance, that something good would come out of it. But clearly, it is pikuach nefesh. I think it's changing. The scenario in that is changing. And by the way, things like Project Inspire, where they've realized, the people behind it have realized that it's our people that don't feel sufficiently prepared to answer questions. That's really what it's all about at the Shabbos table. Everybody feels that their own Shabbos table is somewhat insufficient and not inspiring enough. And on top of which, they are petrified of answering either halachic or even worse, hashkafa questions. So we're dealing with that a little bit with people like Rabbi Saperman, with the Amuna project, and my friend Rabbi Mechanic with Kiruv Kriven. We need to have many, many more people like that doing the Kiruv Kriven, and then we can use all of these Kriven for our Rechaikim.
So in closing, would you agree with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, with Rav Sternbach? What would you tell our listeners? How to do.
Well, I it's interesting. I was just talking to our local Chabad fellow about this, and I think that the Chabad people have to follow the Lubavitcher Rebbe. All those that do. It's fine, but I'm with Rav Sternbach that I think that there are too many dangers here for Jewish society as a whole, and sometimes even for the individual who is really maybe prepared to talk to a non-religious Yid, or a not yet religious Yid, but certainly not to a sometimes knowledgeable Gentile who could turn the tables on him. So on that one, I'm totally with Rav Sternbach.
Well, thank you very much, Rabbi Fightman. We very much enjoyed it. And the topic that you chose was particularly stimulating and interesting and not frequently discussed. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. Thank you so much.
Kol tov, Agadir.
Kol tov.
If you are enjoying tonight's radio show, please make sure to read David Lichtenstein's important and innovative new book of the same title as this broadcast, Headlines, Halakhic Debate of Current Events, published by OU Press. Embark on a fascinating journey through halakha on some of the most important and controversial breaking issues of the day. Available at your local Jewish booksellers and at Amazon.
So I'd like to discuss a topic that came up in the news this week, and it's relevant both to this parsha and life in general. The New York Times had an article this week, "When a plain seat next to a woman is against Orthodox faith." And it tells a story about various travelers who arrive on a plane, and they're sitting next to, or the seat next to them is an Orthodox male, generally, and who says his religion prevents him from sitting beside a woman who is not his wife, and how to deal with it. And some of the travelers are, you know, agree, but many don't agree. And the article had hundreds of responses, and honestly, the vast majority of them were quite negative. And the question is, should our hashkafa be? Is this, what is appropriate behavior? Now, I'm a, so, quote-unquote, modern working person, and, you know, your first gut reaction is to say, well, you know, we live in American society, and we just have to accommodate the world that we live in, etc. We're guests here, and we can't push our agenda onto others, which is, you know, if other people, that's basically the concept of separation of church and state. Imagine if, you know, the Muslims said, hey, you know, we don't want to have Jews in our section, etc. It becomes very, you know, it becomes very slippery slope. That would be our first reaction. But on further thought, I was thinking, let's take the following situation. You would have two, you know, girls coming from Florida. They're in Miami, and they're scantily dressed. And a priest gets on the plane in his, you know, all befrocked in his black and white, and he ends up in a middle seat between two scantily clad women. And I ask you, would this priest be uncomfortable? And I imagine, you know, priests have a take the vow of celibacy, I could see them being very uncomfortable. So I think we should try to look at it with a less prejudiced eye and see, like, what is the appropriate thing to do? Like, what is fear? And on one hand, we should not be subjecting our religious views on others. I mean, you bought a seat, live with the rules of your seat. On the other hand, we should have some type of sensitivity towards people's, you know, reactions, etc., right? If somebody was particularly heavy in that seat, very often it's not comfortable. We recognize there are heavy people as well. I mean, my gut feeling would be as if somebody's particularly, you know, concerned about this, maybe they should only fly with a companion, with a, you know, with their wife. Or alternatively, if they wanted to be polite, be prepared for it and bring a box of chocolate or some gift, and spend $50 or $100 and turn to the person next to you and say, it's really uncomfortable for me, but maybe I have a gift. Would you accept this beautiful box of Godiva and exchange seats? Because they really are going out of their way. So I see it as torn. On one hand, I recognize that we can't legislate that people should have a right because of their religious views to ask people to do what is contractually they have a right to do. But on the other hand, I understand that, you know, I sympathize with people who have that. Now, some people say halachically, Reb Moshe Feinstein said that on a bus, you're allowed to sit next to a woman, and that's correct. But I wonder, I'm not sure if that's necessarily 100% appropriate in this situation. Very often in a bus, it's for a short period of time. It's you're going from DeKalb Avenue to, 54th Street or 56th Street. Whereas in a plane, you could be stuck for 4 or 5 hours between two people. Also, in a bus, you do have the ability to get up if there's not, you know, if there's a woman on one side of you, not on the other side. So you can see a little bit of a difference. Even though halachically, you probably could be Simach and Ramesha, even in a plane. But I could see where people could say, you know, I'm exceedingly uncomfortable. But I think that to make the plane wait for 15 or 20 minutes for it to go off, I do think that's incorrect. I think that if you don't have that box of chocolates and the person is standing on their contract, the person should say, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to get off the plane. Because you can try, but ultimately we can't enforce our religion on the next person. I don't think that's something that's, you know, there's a story. Everybody in the world heard of the great tzaddik, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. And he was in Litta, he was, you know, the Gadol in Litta. You know, he was the grandfather of Reb Chaim Moisa. He was, you know, the Gadol Hador. You know, Bismana. He was the Gadol Hador. And so he came to a city called Slutsk, and everybody in the city wanted him to be their guest. So Reb Yisrael Salanta, one wealthy man came to him and he said, you know, Reb Yisrael, I would love you to stay by me and eat by me Friday night. It would be the biggest honor, etc. And he agreed. And he inquired about the person and his kashrus, and he agreed. So to his house that night, he invited 50 people. And they brought out the silver. This man was going to make it. This was his night. I mean, he had the biggest celebrity, the Rav, the Gadol Hador of Lithuania, of the whole Lithuania world, basically, in his house. And to his amazement, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said, let's not sing anything before Kiddush. Let's go straight to Kiddush. So they went straight to Kiddush. And he, right after the Kiddush, they wanted to sit down and talk. No, we have to go wash. And he said, let's have the fish right away. And they ate the fish, and he ate the fish in 5 minutes. And he said, bring the soup. And the entire meal lasted 25 minutes. And this Balabas was so crestfallen. This was going to be his night. This was going to be the meal that lasted till 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, this was his time to, you know, break into all the magazines. There were going to be pictures of him in Mishpacha and Hamodia and whatever the Gedolah magazines are. And he didn't understand it. And at the end, after they benched, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said, who did the cooking? With a little twinkle in his eye, he said, well, you know, we have a widow who does the cooking for us, a poor widow who has to, you know, can't be with her family on Friday night because she has to earn a living. He said, can I thank her? Say, sure. They brought the widow came out, and Rabbi Yisrael Salanta looked at her and he said, I want to thank you very much. He said, do you cook here every Friday night? She said, yes. He says, until when does the meal go? She says, usually till around midnight. He says, well, it's only 9:30. Tonight you can actually go home and eat with your family. And she looked at him and she had a tear in her eye and she said, you know, thank you so much. It's the first time I'll eat with my children on a Friday night in many years. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta turned around to the person and he said, I know you want to do mitzvahs and you want to have good meals, but you're really not doing a mitzvah if you're doing it at somebody else's expense. And that really, you know, I think that is a very valuable message, and it's an oft-forgotten message. But, you know, in general, I think that there are many times when we do mitzvahs, when we do our good deeds, and we sort of lose perspective of what is a mitzvah and what isn't a mitzvah. And it's not really black and white. Now, let me ask you a question. We just learned by the karbanis, by the sacrifices, two interesting rules. One is that every karban, every sacrifice had to have salt sprinkled on it. And additionally, every sacrifice, it says, Reach Nichayach Lashem, it had a wonderful odor. And that was the sign that of its acceptance was a Reach Nichayach Lashem. It made a beautiful aroma. What is this about this mitzvah with aroma, with sacrifices and aromas? And you know what I would suggest to you? Let me tell you two stories. Okay? So, here's a story. There's a man. It's before Pesach. And there's a knock on his door. And there's a beggar standing there. poor, disheveled, dirty, hungry. And it's the end of the winter. He's probably cold, too. And he says, I'm really starving. Can you give me something to eat? And this guy says, you know, we're cleaning for Pesach. My wife isn't doing any cooking. I'm sorry, I have no food. And he tries to close the door. So the guy puts his foot in the door. He says, I'm really starving. You don't have anything? He says, well, we're cleaning for Pesach. Who has time? And and the guy has his foot there. He says, okay, let me look. So he goes to the garbage. And what does he find? Wife was cleaning out the refrigerator. And there's a piece of a loaf of moldy gefilte fish left over from Purim. His wife found in the refrigerator in a corner. So he comes back out. He says, here, take this fish. So the guy sits down on the curb and he devours the fish. So this guy looks out the window a minute later and he can't believe what he sees. He's the guy devoured the spoiled, moldy fish. And he starts rolling on the floor with his stomach ache. And then he starts vomiting and he faints. So this guy sees the poor beggar fainted. He runs, he brings his car, he puts the guy in his car. He brings him to the hospital. 2 days later, he visits him in the hospital. A few days later, he hears that the poor man died. He goes to the funeral. He goes to the Levaya. The week after the Levaya, he goes to Nicham Avelim to the Shiva visit. A few days later, this man's wife, the homeowner's wife, sees him, and he seems so happy and energized. She says, why are you so besimcha? Why are you so happy? Why are you so energized? He says, just imagine, with one piece of gefilte fish, how many mitzvahs I was able to do. First, I was able to run Hatzalah and take a man to a hospital. Then, I was able to be Mekayim Bikachaylam. I was able to visit him while he's sick. That's a mitzvah. Then, I went to his Levaya. I was able to go to a funeral. That's a mitzvah. And then, when his family was sitting Shiva, I went for a Shiva call. I went for Nicham Avelim. Four great mitzvahs with one piece of fish. I ask you, does this man getting the point of a mitzvah? Four mitzvahs with one piece of fish. So it's funny. We could do four mitzvahs that would seem to be mitzvahs, but there's no reach nichayach here. It doesn't smell good. It doesn't feel right. You know, the mitzvahs are very black and white, but a mitzvah could be totally out of place too. You know, there's the halach in Shulchan Aruch. It says when we see something that God has made that's very unusual, we make a bracha, Mishana Habriyas, Lord who creates strange creatures. If you see a unicorn, you would make that bracha. Now, you know, some people, when they do a bracha, they also pick up the object. Like when we make Kiddush Friday night, we pick up the kais. When we make an esrig, we'll pick up the esrig. So they say there was this very devout man, and he sees a midget one day in the street. So he runs over to the guy, and he picks him up and waves him high over his head, and he makes the bracha. Baruch atah Hashem, Mishana HaBriyas, blessed are you, Lord, who has made strange, wondrous creations. And he's waving this midget around the middle of the street. Right? Such a pious person. Such a tzaddik. So you see, mitzvahs are rules, but ultimately, they have to have a reach nichayach. If there's something about them that doesn't have a good aroma, you could be missing the entire point with all your entire mitzvah. And amazingly, sometimes you can do an aveira, right? Something that seems to be against the law, that has a very beautiful scent. And let me share with you a story. It's brought in the Vaharivna from Rav Zilberstein. He brings a story on Pesach. He says, how could you make Kiddush on Pesach with chametz instead of matzah? Quite amazing. How you make, instead of matzah, you have a loaf of bread on the table, and that's what you make the bracha on? So he says a story, brings a fascinating story. He says, there were a number of Jews in the Warsaw ghetto that was under, you know, Nazi rule, right? And it was the night of Pesach, must have been 1942. There were no four kaises there, right? There was no matzah. The only murr they had, the only bitter thing is they had is that the ghetto was strewn with the corpses of men, women, and children. And they sat on the floor, and all they had were two pieces of bread. So what did they do? The halacha is, if you don't have wine for Kiddush, you make Kiddush on bread. You make it on Lacha Mishnah. So what did they do? They made Kiddush in the Warsaw Ghetto on challah. And when it came to the time to make the Hamaitzi, what did they say? They made it with Shem Yichud. And what was the Shem Yichud that they said? They said, Rabbeinu Shalom, Master of the World, you know how much we would like to do your commandments, how much we would like to eat matzah, how much we would like to drink the four kaisis, and to be Mekayev, on this holy night, we should eat the matzahs with, in front of you, but we can't. And there is another mitzvah called V'chai Bohem, a commandment that says to live, and every mitzvah is nidcha because of V'chai Bohem. So they made a Shem Yichud, may your holy name be sanctified, and we are preparing to do the mitzvah V'chai Bohem, and they made Hamaitzi Lechem in Eretz, and they made Kiddush on the bread, and they ate the Kezayis Chametz. So I ask you, here you have a group of Jews who sanctify Hashem's name, who Mekadeshem Shemayim, and make a little Shem Yichud, and eat B'Kedusho B'Tahara, a piece of Chametz on Pesach. What could be worse than eating bread on Pesach, leavened bread on Pesach? And then you have the other guy who very sanctimoniously, in a holy way, killed somebody with a piece of fish and then did his four mitzvahs. So one man with his mitzvahs did averus, and one man with his avera did mitzvahs. So you see that by the karbanas, what are the karbanas, the sacrifices? It says when we're about to do something to where we think we're giving of ourselves, it has to have a good aroma. You could be doing, we could be doing all the acts in the world that according to the letter of the law are correct, but there's really something about it that feels very, very wrong. And if it smells very, very wrong, that's not a good sign. Now another thing it says about the karbanos, by the commandments, by the sacrifices, and all your sacrifices sprinkle salt. And why is that? Because I'll tell you something interesting about salt. If you don't eat salt, it's tasteless. There was a family in Russia that it was under the Peter the Great. They were oppressed. There was some minority religion like the Copts, some spin-off of Christianity. And the father, ran with his wife into the Ural Mountains, into a very remote part of Russia, someplace near Siberia, Lake Nikal, it's called, very deep, huge lake. And he lived there for 40 years. And once some Russian plane was flying over that area, and they see signs of human habitation in an area where there wasn't a road in hundreds of miles. And they came down, and they met these people, and they spoke some strange language. They hadn't had human contact in 40 years. And they asked them, what was some of the hardest things about living in isolation? And one of the answers was, we didn't have salt on anything. Everything tasted horrible. So with no salt, things are horrible. Life is tasteless. But on the other hand, try then to eat a teaspoon of salt. It's awful. It's often terrible. Also terrible. So what then does salt represent? No salt is terrible. Too much salt is awful. So in effect, what is salt? The message of salt? It's really about moderation. So I'll call Karbancha Takar of Melach, two rules by Karbanas. All your karbanas, make sure they're in moderation. Make sure they're well-balanced. Make sure if you want to really be frum, it doesn't hurt somebody else. It's not at somebody else's expense. You know, a mitzvah that's done at somebody else's expense, is that really a mitzvah? Is that my mitzvah? Or maybe it's their mitzvah. You know, my father, Zechariah Bracha, used to tell a story. He says, in the olden days, when the rabbi of the city, the rav of the city, would get sick. So they didn't, very often, maybe they didn't have such good doctors that like they have today, you know, before antibiotics. And also very devout and pious Erlicha people, they would get up in shul. and it would make an appeal. But rather than an appeal for money, because we all know that people could have all the money in the world and sickness, everybody ends up in a pine box, no matter how much money you have, right? You can't take it with you. So what did they donate? Rather than money, they would donate days of their life. So a Rav got sick, a rabbi got sick, and they said, one man set up, he said, I donate 2 days of my life to the rabbi, he should have another 2 days. One guy said, I donate 3 days. One guy said 6 hours. One guy said a week. One guy got up and he gave a bang on the table and he said, I donate 10 years. The whole shul became quiet. So somebody finally piped up and they said, Herman, 10 years? He said, don't worry, I'm not giving my 10 years, I'm giving my wife's. It's not my 10 years, it's her 10 years. We realize that when you're giving away somebody else's, there's not really a sacrifice. So what does the pasuk say? Al kor korbancha takrav melech. Do it with moderation. Make sure it's thought out. It's not on somebody else's cheshbon. It's not at the cost of somebody else. Additionally, make sure that it has a reich nichayach. It smells good, because you could be following the law of the Shulchan Aruch, but if it's hurtful and it doesn't feel, and you look at it and you say, something doesn't smell right, it probably isn't right. Well, thank you so much. I would like to just discuss, next week, we will be having a fascinating conversation. It will be with Rabbi Yehuda David Bleich, the Reish Koel of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. He will be talking about vaccinations. Do we have an obligation to vaccinate our children? And additionally, does a school have to take in children who aren't vaccinated? Many parents believe that vaccinations could be dangerous. We will, you know, we'll have letters from Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, etc. Does it cause autism, etc.? This particular author does not believe so. But does a school have to? The following week, we will have Hagoyin Reb Hershel Shechta, the Rashiva of Reb Yitzchak Elchanan, and he will be speaking about bankruptcy in Halacha. Even though, according to Halacha, there is no concept of bankruptcy, since there's Dina D'Malchus Adina, there's Minig HaSeichrim, etc., does bankruptcy wipe out personal debts? Additionally, the following week, we'll also have Dr. David Pelkowitz, and he will be speaking about raising teenagers with the Internet. How do we deal with the Internet? We know that a number of Rabbanim recently came out and said that there was an asifa that said that the way to deal with the Internet is to know that Ein lecha chelek l'olam haba if you have it in your house. And the question is, are there possibly other alternatives without resorting to Ein lecha chelek l'olam haba? I look forward to speaking to you next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please join us again next week for another edition of Headlines.